This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And it's great to be back with you again. So glad you could join us. And as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation, we've got a really exciting show today. We've got Ann Lu is back with us again. She's professor and graduate program director of the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at the University of Massachusetts in Dartmouth. Last year, we spoke of cybersecurity endpoint authentication with Dr. Lu, and how she sees a utopian future where the internet prevents crime. She still believes that. And the lack of privacy will make everyone behave. Is that behave to my ideas of morality and behavior or your ideas of morality and behavior? We couldn't quite get into that, but anyway, she's pretty adamant in what she believes. So we also spoke about the Apple iPhone and getting in the back door. She said there's no real back door, that there's a number of ways the FBI can get what they want if they want to, and they have to worry about really a guard dog. I think that is interesting. So we're going to cover that in a minute or so. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, and visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, right now we're going to go to the phone and we're going to talk to Ann Lu. She's Professor of Graduate Program Director, Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering at the University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth. And you might remember Ann Lu from Dr. Lu from last year when she was on the program and spoke of cybersecurity endpoint authentication and how she sees a utopian future where the internet prevents crime. I'm going to really want to get into that with her, but right now talk about the message that she's going to be delivering at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference that's going on in Boston in May. And the subject of her paper is message authentication in driverless cars. Is that right, Dr. Lu?
Right. We have three papers published with three separate graduate students, and also one of them with my colleague of about 20 years. Mm-hmm. So one is a driverless car, the other is a USP technology security and analysis, and the last one is a sequel work of the award-winning paper last year, two-factor authentication through near-field communication.
Okay, well, tell us about the driverless cars. What is the message that you're going to deliver about message authentication in driverless cars?
Okay. In the driverless cars, the reason you can give up your driver right because the car becomes smart, equipped with the computation power and communication power. Mm-hmm. Basically, there are two types of power. One is regarding the safety messages, like pre-collision warning, blind spot detection, pedestrian objection going through, and then so that you can avoid accidents. On the other hand, the cars can drive very closely, forming a platoon. That way will result reduction of traffic congestion and fuel consumption. On the other hand, the passenger, because you give it up as a driver, now you become a passenger, and you will be enjoying the view and also have the information entertainment while you are driving, while you are taking the ride. Okay. So because of all this message going through, and there's a danger that if the message not authentic, mm-hmm. if there's a fake message,
yeah, yeah.
if the message gets corrupted,
yes.
then there will be grave danger because the cars are very close to each other. Then we'll have a tremendous accident, the chain accident. And also the malicious attackers or organized groups could direct the cars to the unintended destination. And that was the results will be devastating.
Yeah, these are big worries and concerns that we have. We hear about driverless cars, and all these things cross my mind. I don't want to be in a driverless car for that very reason. How will I be feeling safe to be in a driverless car?
So that's why you have to have the message to have a certain way to make sure the message are authentic. The message, the real message coming from the device, and they have to be coordinated to make sure the message not just from one car could fool you, but if you have all the cars communicating among each other and the other devices to monitor the message are real and not, or message are real and the true, not the fake message.
Well, how's that going to happen? I mean, there's all these cars going to be driving driverless, and they're all going to be getting messages of some sort or other. I don't know exactly how it's going to be, but it's probably to keep them on the road and to keep them safe. How are you going to keep your individual automobile to get the individual message that it's supposed to get, and not some message from a Mack truck down the road somewhere?
Okay, that's one way, is to make sure that each device has its own unique identifier. So the messages sent from that device carry its own hardware fingerprints for that particular car.
Okay.
And the other hand, that we have to have other devices we call the roadside devices, and also could be satellite, and then other devices, and also we have a police car, and that will coordinate all the devices so that the receiver will be able to tell if those messages, if the message you are receiving from each individual car will be authentic and not taken as granted, so you analyze it and to whether discard the faulty messages.
Okay, well, we've already experienced computer failure. I mean, every day our computers go down or something's amiss or something's happens and we've got to get it reinstated. Then they work perfectly for the longest time, and all of a sudden they go to pieces again. Why would we trust our lives and our loved ones to a computer in a driverless car?
Absolutely. I really share your concern. That's why it's fundamentally important we have to slow down the process of releasing the driverless cars on the road until we fully understand the technology, and this is not just technology issue. This is also the legal issue and the social issue.
Well, yeah.
We have to fully understand. For example, the recent IEEE Spectrum announced that in 2023, that's the year 2023, the first time a driverless car strike a pedestrian. So who's at the fault? Now, is the owner at the fault? Now, the owner says he could be hacked, just like the owner of your computer could be hacked. Right? Is the manufacturer at the fault? But manufacturer said, I delivered a perfect car, but someone might be hacked on it. Or it's the car maintenance at the fault. The car maintenance says, yes, yesterday I just checked your car, everything's perfect, but someone just broke into your car. So it's very hard to decide when such an unfortunate thing happened. We need to really slow down the process and fully understand from all aspects, not just technology, but the legal and the social aspects.
Yeah, if I'm not driving the car, I don't know how I could be held responsible for any kind of an accident or mishap that would happen with my automobile, except for the fact that maybe I bought it and allowed it to be on the road in the first place. Does that make sense?
It's the same thing. Just like, for example, you own your computer.
Yeah.
Right? And then your computer being hacked, become a zombie, and participated in part of a distributed denial of service attack. Who is responsible? You have certain responsibility to the computer you own, because you also should make sure your computer is safe by promptly install the security mechanism in it. So the same thing as a driverless car.
Well, yeah, but what I mean is, the thing is that let's not even consider a hacker with a driverless car. Let's consider a mechanical malfunction of some sort that happens with that is caused by the automated computer things that are on the car. I mean, we hear about GPS all the time, and there was a story not too long ago where a person was following GPS perfectly, drove down a road where the bridge was out, and drove into the lake. And so, how much trust are we going to put into things that are not human, without a human override?
Right, the same thing. Actually, 2 years ago, one of my graduate students, now he works in Newark, his work is on the GPS, how they spoof the GPS and lead you to a nowhere. So this is really devastating, that when the artificial intelligence or when the device in control of us, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So that's why it's a much bigger issue than technology. But this paper that my graduate student working with me, we are only consider the technology side of you to make sure the message are authentic. And so we have to do it two ways. One way is to block the attacker, get into your car, alter your device, so that your car has unique identifier and that unique identifier cannot be forced or cannot be forged. Then with that assumption, then the next one, we try to make sure the message are integrity, no change. But still someone could make a car send a false message, and that false message is coming from the real car with the unique identifier. So how do I know that kind of message is a message reflect the real world? That's why we need another mechanism, we call this roadside units, and with the security mechanism, and then we do have to do the data mining to coordinate understanding the situation, just like a human being using the judgment.
Okay.
To the message that you're receiving.
Well, yeah, but then how is this authentication going to happen? Is it code words or something? Like we have a password that we use with our computers, and that gets hacked and that gets figured out? I mean, what kind of authentication are you going to have? Is it going to be some sort of a signal, an electronic pulse? I don't understand this.
Okay, this authentication will have a multiple steps of authentication.
Okay.
One thing like the people are very familiar with, like passcode, password, this is what we said last time, as what you know. Okay. And the next thing would be that a token that you have, you cannot open the car unless you have a special your key. So that's like what you have. And then the third one, it's your unique biology, such as your voice, your fingerprints, and that's what you are. So all three kind of a process, and now we have even new methods so that we can correlate to make sure you are who you are, you are who you claim you are, and then you can get into access of your car. However, you are who you claim you are does not mean you are an honest person and issue the right message. By the way, this right message is not what you issue, it's what your car issue. I'm talking about the attacker could broke into your car and get into the wrong message. But now, we're already using this different stages authentication to prevent attacker broke into your car. But attacker themselves can make a car issue a false message. So that's another level of protection. We'll use the coordination, artificial intelligence to understand the message and knows what are the true message in terms of the environmental understanding and what are the false message.
Yeah, well, last year when you and I were speaking about cybersecurity and endpoint authentication, we were talking about the fingerprints, maybe the retina in the eye, or any number of the uniqueness of a voice or something of that particular situation.
Yeah, your uniqueness, your heartbeat, for example.
Right. Well, yeah, but I mean, everybody's heartbeat's about the same pace, I think, don't they? Really? So.
Oh no, actually, that's very interesting. That the heartbeat as a right now considered as the best way of authentication because they're not really having the same pace. And each person has a different kind of pattern, just like your fingerprint. And the third one, the fingerprint is dynamic biology inform identification. A heartbeat that at any moment is changing to dynamic.
Well,
instead, the fingerprint is a static bio-identity.
Well, if the heartbeat's changing every moment, how am I going to be able to distinguish my heartbeat from your heartbeat? I mean, wow, that's quite a... If it's changing, yours is changing too.
Yeah, that mechanism right now, the heartbeat mechanism can be used pretty well in the body area network when the devices on your body can communicate with each other to know they are on your body and they are sensing your current status and adjust your status. But how that could be used in, say, the cars and the other devices off your body, that is under research right now. So we are not at that level.
Okay, but I mean, all right. So we've got authentication and getting into the cars, and we're going to be using some sort of method to make sure that it's me, because it's unique to me to get into my car, and nobody else can do that. So I will be the only driver, and somebody can't really carjack my car and go anywhere with it. That'll end carjacking. But what about the other signals that my car is getting? It has to say, you know, I'm following too close, going too fast, got to make, a hard right-hand turn, watch out, there's road obstruction. I'm following within 3 feet of the car in front of me doing 80 miles an hour, and all of a sudden that car has a blowout, or some mechanical failure. Well, I'm crashing into him, and the guy behind me, who's only 3 feet off my bumper going 80 miles an hour, crashes into me, and pretty soon we have 127 car pileup all over the freeway. How do I don't see the safety in driverless cars the way you're describing them at all.
That is really devastating. So we just talked about how to authenticate a person get into your car as the car's owner.
Okay.
But the next step about the message, the car, the devices in the car that issue the message themselves. So the car has to have its own identity. Okay. This car right now, for example, the Apple's iPhone, the case just happened, and each Apple's phone has its own identity.
Okay.
But it's a unique hardware identity. You can consider that as the device fingerprint. So that one, right now, the Apple has certain technology being fused in the hardware, and that special fingerprint that cannot be replicated because of the way how the hardware be designed, just like your fingerprint cannot be replicated. So that special fingerprint can tell that car versus the other car.
Okay, well, I'm glad you brought up the Apple example, because I'm going to want to get into that with you, you know, a little bit too. But before we get there, the government wants a back door to get into the Apple encrypted messages that are on these phones. There's a big to-do going on about that right at the moment. The courts are going to have to settle where that's going to go. But with these driverless cars, are the police going to be able to have a back door into the systems on these cars so that, let's say, a car is being operated by a maniac going the wrong way on a highway or something like that? Will the police be able to shut the car down from remotely? Will there be a back door?
Okay. Now, these are two separate issues. One, I have to clear you out.
Okay.
The concept of the back door.
All right.
Especially in the case of the FBI versus the Apple, about San Bernardino's the iPhone case.
Yeah.
I will not. That's not a back door. Okay. Right now, you can think about three stages. That is a door. There. It's not a back door. It's a door there already, to be clear. And now there are three stages how this door is being protected. Okay. The first one, usually, is the most phones, for example, the Android phone. You need a key to unlock that door, such as your passcode and password. Then the second is that the FBI is trying to do is they don't have a key, because only the owner has the key.
Yeah.
So the FBI wants to pick the lock, use the brute force method.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Means that they just try all the combinations. you think that door is with a locker of a combination. So try all the combinations and how that goes. Okay. And then the third stage is that Apple put themselves into the battle between the user and the law enforcement. Is Apple put a guard dog in front of the lock, that if you picked 10 times, did not get the lock, did not unlock the lock, then Apple would scramble the data on the phone and everything become useless.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a misconcept to think the FBI requests the Apple for the backdoor. No, it's not. FBI simply asked Apple to take the guard dog away for that particular phone. That's what Bill Gates is better understanding this case. That's why Bill Gates back FBI comparing to other Silicon Valley big shots position.
Okay, so they want the iPhone being built without the guard dog. And not the fact that they need a back door to get in, because it's thought that the TSA or somebody could break in anytime they want to. But if they try to break in more than 10 times, whatever it is, the guard mm-hmm. dog eats all the evidence and scrambles it, and everything disappears. That's what you're saying,
right? That's per se. And also, you can see that in the security, you never can say anything is secure for life. Security is just a matter of time. And the time can be bought by money. I mean the resource, communication resource. So all you have to do, the FBI is trying to use the certain kind of resource to buy the time. For example, as I said, that the door that the Apple put on the iPhone has three mechanisms to protect it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So each one, you can break it, just a matter of time. For example, with the key, the first step. It's the only user has a key. So you can take the key or you can coax to get the key from the user. That's called social engineering. And then the FBI uses the second step when the FBI tries to pick the door. So you try all the combinations. That's called brute force. Or you can add save some more time. Instead of brute force, you can use some other decryption methods, more advanced methods.
In the second half, we have an exciting feature of Nobel laureates you want to stick around for. So right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information for today's query.
And the third one, the guards, Apple says, okay, we are not going to do it for this, because if we do this, and then the malicious people would do the attacker, even say Chinese will do that. But anyway, even though Apple don't put software in there to take the guard dog away, somebody else will be able to do it through, for example, reverse engineering. I bet people around the world are racing the clock, try to get that try to just develop their own software to remove the guard dog. And there's other case, the fourth case, that my students and I, the co-author, Matthew Crossman, also the one we won the best paper award together,
mm-hmm.
Matthew Crossman and I, we talk about it, and I said, there will be a fourth case, and I challenge him if he can use the fourth method. The fourth method is that, okay, the FBI, because FBI owns the phone, then we can duplicate the signal in that phone. Right. If that's a very hard...
So you're suggesting that if the FBI wants to crack that Apple iPhone and get in the so-called back door, which you say there isn't really a back door, it's just all doors, they want to do that, that there's a number of ways to do it. And the fourth way, you say, is just duplicate what's on the phone and get in that way. I'm going to want to know more about this, Wong, so I hope you stick around. We've got a break now for the half hour, and then we'll be back in just a little bit, so stick around. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Yeah, from out of the past, it's Oscar Wilde. All things in moderation, including moderation.